Oh, so pleased to meet you. Welcome to the Sportsline Podcast. I'm Bubba O'Neill. Hey, as we tend to do, we always focus and put that focus remaining on the outstanding teams, athletes, executives, and broadcasters that hail from Hamilton, Halton, and Niagara. But on the Tuesday edition, we trade in our interview format for a square-off format where sports talk, opinion, and a few good chuckles are first and foremost. One of our original guests has returned, and if you've been a resident in the Golden Horseshoe or perhaps a Tiger Cats fan, the name Rick Samperin is not new to you. Over two decades, this Hamilton resident has climbed the ladder at Steeltown's legendary radio station, taking on roles as reporter, sports director, sideline reporter, the voice of the Hamilton Ticats, news anchor, and now as the assistant program director, is your host of Good Morning Hamilton on Global News Radio 900 CHML. Rick Samperin, always great to see you. Thanks for coming back.
You missed one thing. Window washer should have been on the list. Maybe next time.
It is amazing, though. I think we don't really look at what we did in our careers at this point right now, which is such a daily thing. But really, at that station, you have covered all bases.
Just about everything, from producing talk shows to going out reporting in the field, covering sports teams like the Ticats and Bulldogs. Mm-hmm. But it's been a lot of fun.
You know, and it's funny, we had Coach Sal here last week, you know, talking about times with you. Any good memories of with him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think the first and foremost memory that comes to mind whenever I think of Sal is on non-game days, when we would go to restaurants or, you know, share a drink and talking about the game that's coming up. Mm-hmm. And he's just a wealth of information, one of the classiest guys you're ever going to meet. I had a barn burner of a time with Coach Sal.
Mm-hmm. He is, and it is true, and I brought this up with him, and I didn't want to embarrass him, but I remember Mike Morielli telling me that even after playing for a dozen years and going up and doing games with him and sharing opinions and talking about the game, that he still learned as a broadcaster about the game of football well after his playing years.
Yeah, I mean, Sal has a great ability to teach you about the game without saying, you know, look at this and this is how it broke. Just the way he would describe things and how, you know, certain players were used in certain positions and certain schemes at certain points in the game. It was so interesting. And wealth of information, and happy to call him a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and that was a beautiful run that you guys had on playing, presenting those games. And of course, now as the host of the fifth quarter, I know we've talked about this before, but I'll tell you, every single time it is must listen to radio once you get into your car after a Ticat game.
It's the easiest show that I'm ever going to do in the history of my career because it's, hello, Ticats fans, and away we go. Mm-hmm. And everyone's got an opinion, and it's great to hear their opinion. That's what makes the show, you know, so vitally entrenched in the fabric of this community. And it's easy to host, but it's fun to host, too.
And it's been, like, over 50 years.
Yeah, over 60 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, at CHML. Yeah, we've had run of the gamut from Bob Rutina to Ted Michaels to myself hosting the thing and just talking to Ticats fans about wins and losses and Grey Cup championships, and hopefully sometime soon the latter will happen again.
Well, we're hoping at some point, right? 25 years without a Grey Cup, and I know I keep bringing it up, but it is amazing to me that we have not tasted, you know, that Grey Cup or seen some type of parade up and down Main or King and get to enjoy that. But yeah, there's been free agency that has gone through here in the CFL. Yeah. Do you like what the Tiger Cats have done and executed?
Yeah, in short, absolutely. You know, I thought, you know, from a coaching perspective, going to Scott Milanovich, I'm very intrigued to see what he does and what he's able to unlock with, you know, Bull Levi Mitchell and this offense. Defensively, I really like the front four and even the depth on that line. The linebackers will be interesting. We'll see how they make out. The secondary, I think, is vastly improved. And special teams is kind of the same from last year. There might be some new wrinkles here and there, but top to bottom, I like what they've done in free agency.
What about the rest of the East? I mean, obviously, I guess you would have to have the Argos as the, I mean, they're coming off the great year they had last year. They're still sort of, I would guess you'd have to pick them maybe as a repeating or at least the favorites in the East. I mean, I don't want to disrespect the Montreal Alouettes, but they did get hot at the right time.
Yeah.
Where do you think Hamilton fits in that mix?
Good question, because Montreal was kind of I don't know what we're going to get out of them last year, and they showed us they were worthy of, you know, that Grey Cup championship status. So I kind of put them as a wild card because are they going to rest on the laurels? They've already won a title. How hungry are they going to be? Mm-hmm. But in the same sense, Jason Moss is a very competitive guy. So, yes. You know, Montreal is going to be good. I think Ottawa is by default has to be better. I mean, if they're not, something's in the water in Ottawa that doesn't make any sense. So I'm saying Ottawa is going to be a little bit better. Toronto, I think, takes a step back. There's no way they're winning 16 games again.
No.
Chad Kelly has some off-field issues that obviously he and the league has to deal with.
True.
The team, I think, lost a lot of talent through free agency. So I think, you know, 1 through 4, the Ticats are in the mix for that one spot. It's going to come down to health, as it always does.
Yep.
Can they beat the Argos and the Alouettes this mm-hmm. year? And if they can, yeah, they have a shot.
I know you're a big soccer fan as well, too. Forge FC, how do they continue to be contenders year in, year out? It is amazing to me. They just started training camp here at home yesterday. It's great to see, but I keep thinking, is there going to be a point right now where it falls off?
I've thought about that for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years now, right? 5 years in the league, and they've won 4 championships, and each and every year you think, okay, this is going to be the year that, you know, they don't get it done. I'm not sure what they have for breakfast each and every day or if they're buying lottery tickets. If not, they should. Not to say that this has been a, you know, the luck of the draw, but for 5 consecutive seasons right out of the gate of the CPL, they've been the class of the league, and it's been amazing to see. And, you know, they've lost some guys over the years. They brought some guys back. Mm-hmm. They have had some roster consistency. And of course, coach Bobby Smyrniotis is a guy who's seems to press all the right buttons in terms of bringing guys in or come those big games, get the most out of his side.
He sets that expectation, doesn't he? And they seem to listen to him. And you would think, and we've seen this in pro sports, right, where the message wears off.
Yeah.
Eventually, the voice, you get tired of it. But for some reason, he knows how to tap into each one of these players at different positions and get the best out of them.
It's the mark of a Hall of Fame type coach mm-hmm. who each and every game day get the most out of your 11. And then the guys you bring on as subs, mm-hmm. They haven't had extraordinary injuries, mm-hmm. which is a good sign, because obviously the training staff is doing their thing. But at the end of the day, they're executing when they're asked to do so. And whether that's through coaching, training, the scheme that's developed before each and every game, they're getting it done. And yeah, I've asked the question, like, how can you always win, whether it's regular season or championships or and the secret is there. And I think it just comes down to having quality players and having a superstar as a head coach as well.
And it's interesting that I think the fact that his name is now starting to elevate, not just some in the area, not so much in the CPL. I mean, there's some words about the national team whenever they decide to do what they're going to later do at some point in terms of a manager. And I think it would only make sense.
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking MLS, right? Mm-hmm. When TFC was kind of looking around, you know, Coach Bobby's name was kind of, you know, uttered. And the national team, I think they would hit a home run with Bobby Smyrniotis mm-hmm. as their tone setter to say, this is how we're going to get to that next level. Let's not forget, a World Cup is coming in a couple of years. Yeah. So that would be a prime gig for anybody to have. It's going to be interesting to see how he does.
Do you follow the EPL?
Yeah, absolutely.
I knew you did. Are we seeing the greatest title chase of all time right now? And I know it's really boiled down to 3 clubs, but it is just spectacular.
On any given Saturday morning, you don't know what's going to happen in the EPL. Yeah. And you can probably say that for most soccer leagues, but I think it's ramped up when you have, you know, the heavy hitters like the Arsenals and the Liverpools and Man Cities and the list, you know, Man United in there, even though they're, you know, not the top team that they used to be.
They could get champions.
They could, yes, I know. But at the end of the day, like, the competition's so tight. The parity is, you know, 1 through, let's say, 6 there. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some favorites each and every kind of Saturday, but it's fun to watch. And the quality of players that they have on the pitch is absolutely amazing.
It's incredible. That Liverpool and Man City game, and I'm more of a Man City guy, mm-hmm. it was through the roof. Like, the intensity, the Anfield, the way people were responding. That league doesn't have playoffs.
Yeah.
But if it did, it would be
It would be insane.
It would be.
They have, obviously, the FA Cup, which is kind of their playoff format, but still. I think because I'm not a fan of a particular team in the EPL, I'm a Juventus guy, they play in Serie A in Italy, I think I benefit more because I just want to see good football.
Right.
And every weekend I'm getting that, and it's amazing.
Final thing, Bulldogs. What a great year they're having right now. And I don't think we had Reed Duffy in here. He even said it. This was not expected, what they're doing right now.
I think anytime a franchise moves, you're going to expect a hiccup. And I think out of the gate, you know, they weren't an extraordinarily good team. It was like, okay, yeah, this is to be expected. But you know, to challenge for the Eastern Conference Championship, to be one of the top dogs, if you will, pardon the pun, in the East. And they're going to be a tough nut to crack come playoff time. Mm-hmm. I think they've exceeded expectations. It's fantastic that they're doing it in Brantford, who's hungry for OHL hockey, and mm-hmm. so much so they're building their own arena to potentially house the Bulldogs, if not another team. Yeah, it's fun. It's great. They are, I think, setting the stage for a team that can go deep into the playoffs.
Kind of what we talked about with Bobby, coaching, mm-hmm. really everything, because this is a very young team that they have.
Jay McKee's got it, right? Mm-hmm. Pushing all the right buttons. I know Steve Staios and Michael Landlauer years ago set the tone and expectations and bringing in character guys, and they're still getting that with Matt Turek, obviously as the GM, still getting that with Jay behind the bench. Mm-hmm. It's a well-oiled machine, and everything, kind of like what Forge FC has done, everything has kind of worked, so it's fun.
Ready to square off?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, folks, here's all kinds of things that are going on right now, and I just don't know what you're going to think. We're coming down to about 18 games left in the regular season in the National Hockey League, and the Toronto Maple Leafs certainly will have a decision, and that is who is going to be in net at this point. So I ask you, Rick, game one, who is your game one starter?
Okay, so I'm not answering this as a Maple Leafs fan. I'm answering this as a pseudo Jim Treliving in the GM role.
Okay.
And my answer is easily Ilya Samsonov. And I wouldn't have said that, you know, 2 months ago, because he's sent down to the Marlies. He's having a tough time regaining his confidence. He was out of the league for a couple weeks because he needed a reset. But, mm-hmm. you know, fast forward to today, Joseph Walsh coming off an injury. He's played 4 playoff games. Samsonov has been relatively hot over the last number of weeks. Ilya Samsonov, slam dunk choice to start the playoffs.
Now, this is where I disagree with you. I think at some point, I don't even know if they're going to re-sign Samsonov. And at some point, you have to believe that you're going to give the ball or give the puck or give the crease in this case to Joe Wall. Yeah. He's your guy. And I thought the fact that they started him in the 2 games against Boston, which they lost 4-1, that proves to me they want him to be that guy.
Well, I think they want him to be the guy. Is he ready to be the guy is the question. I think if you are going to go in to game one, whether it's Boston, which is probably likely, or Florida, which could be a possibility, mm-hmm. whether you have home ice or not, and at this point it's not looking like the Leafs are going to get home ice in the first round, I think you have to go with the guy that gives the team the most confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think right now that's Ilya Samsonov. Now, in 2 weeks' time, that could change
because
we know about goaltending in the Maple Leafs, but I'd go with Samsonov.
It really is insane, and you're right. And I think both guys have had moments of, and I think Joe Wall, his beginning of the season, I thought he had taken the crease from Samsonov. Yeah. The one thing I will say with Samsonov probably gives him, I think you have to maybe respect the fact, and maybe you don't really, but if you're the head coach, you respect the fact that he's the guy that won you a playoff series last year that everyone got so excited about winning a playoff series.
Yeah, that was their Stanley Cup. Unfortunately, it kind of ended right there. And, you know, while they, you know, fared well, at least from a competitive standpoint against Florida, Florida kind of blew them out of the water with their talent level, their tenacity, their forecheck, a physical team. Mm-hmm. And if they face them again, they're in trouble. And they could face them maybe in round 2, although I have my doubts being a Leafs fan. Boston's going to be tough to, you know, execute in the first round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Wherever they play, it's going to be a tough go.
Okay, take off your Treliving hat, and I need the Leaf fan in you. All right, there are going to be, I would think, 4 teams that make the Canadian. Right now, there are 4 teams that are ready in playoff contention right now. The Flames right now, about 8 points out of a wild card. It is so hard to catch up to teams with less than 20 games going. There are the Vancouver Canucks. They have just been going all season long. The Winnipeg Jets, they caught fire in the fall, and then, you know, at one point, we're ahead of the Canucks. The Leafs have kind of been, they've had moments, and the Oilers, the most horrendous start they've had in franchise history, and then they won, what, 18 games in a row? So there's the standings right now for your Canadian teams, and the obvious question is, which team is going to go the farthest?
Well, I will hearken back to question number 1, and it's all about goaltending, mm-hmm. right? You look at those 4 teams, and one thing stands out above them all, because they're all super talented on offense. I think, you know, you can make a case as to which defensive core is the best, and you might have an argument between, you know, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Vancouver. I wouldn't put Leafs in that list, but it comes down to goaltending. Goaltending in the playoffs wins you playoff series, and it can lose you playoff series. And the best goaltending among those Canadian teams, Vancouver, Winnipeg 1-2 or 2-1, however you want to rank them. Mm-hmm. Edmonton probably 3rd, the Leafs 4th, unfortunately. And when you look at matchups in the East and Western Conference, Man, the West is absolutely loaded. But when you look at the East, too, it is, too. You got the Rangers. You got Florida. You got Boston. You know, if Tampa Bay eventually gets in, come playoff time, who knows what you're going to get out of them. Carolina is going to be tough. So, yeah, the East is tough. I see the West is even tougher with Vegas, Colorado, Dallas, yeah. Those three heavy hitters. Man, that's going to be a murderer's row for any of those Canadian teams to get through.
Can you believe that there is a possibility that in the first round, Edmonton may have to face the Vegas Golden Knights? Like that's insane to me.
Yeah, if the playoffs started today, that is round one matchup, and you're looking at a team that is like a gazillion dollars over the cap because of their injuries. Mm-hmm. They have one of the best Canadian goaltenders in Aiden Hill, and a defensive core that got better at the deadline, which is crazy. So, yeah, Edmonton, if they face the Golden Knights, they're probably going to be kicking themselves for that slow start.
You know what, though? When you look at those four teams that we just presented there, and I do agree with you with goaltending, Demko out for 2 to 3 weeks, which is which could be a blessing in disguise, really, yep. Yep. For him to get a little rest prior to the playoff time, get him going, but a week before. Hellebuck, he's so steady, especially at home. I really was surprised at what Vancouver did to Winnipeg in that 5-0 shutout over the weekend. We've talked about the Leafs and their inconsistencies, but I really believe this is the year of the Oilers. I truly believe somehow, some way. Yeah, you heard that saying, you got to lose before you win. They've done enough losing. They are hot enough. They have the two best players arguably in the world right now. I have a feeling that they've got that depth scoring now. Zach Hyman, Leaf fans, Zach Hyman could score 50 goals.
Yeah.
Like, that well could happen right now. And that just sort of offsets some secondary scoring, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I think the Edmonton Oilers are in for a long, and even if they've got to play the likes of Vegas, who I still think, I think they can be a little shaky and are relying on a lot of players to come back, to come off a, LTIR to come off to really give them that boost. I think Edmonton is the team there.
The only knock against Edmonton, too, and not to say I'm not a big Stuart Skinner fan, because I think he has impressed me over his first couple of years in the NHL, is that if they don't get the goaltending, there's not much depth behind him. You know, Calvin Pickard has been good, but, Are they going to be able to rely on him if Skinner goes down with an injury or has a very bad game? But at the end of the day, when you have Connor McDavid on the ice and Leon Draisaitl and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Darnell Nurse and Zach Hyman, who's got, 40-plus goals, imagine him and Matthews in the same line, this Edmonton team can make a deep run, and it's probably, for all intents and purposes, the favorite Canadian team to go all the way because of the players that they have.
Well, and you're right about Skinner. I mean, let's go back just a calendar year. It was Skinner that was a complete failure in the postseason, and Jack Campbell, the cast-off from the Maple Leafs, was the one that almost saved their soul. And at this point, I don't even know, is Jack Campbell, I'm sure he's playing in the AHL right now. It's hard to believe that he is falling off the map the way he has in terms of confidence and getting the job done. All right, so we'll see what happens with the postseason. Blue Jays are just a couple of weeks away from game number one of 162, and they made a move just a couple of days ago that I don't know. I guess we're coming off the trade deadline in the National Hockey League, so we keep hearing these phrases like low-risk maneuver, and I guess this is a low-risk transaction. A 40-year-old Joey Votto, I mean, is he over the hill, Rick? Is there anything he can add to this team, or was this the biggest publicity stunt that Rogers liked to do in the time that they have owned this club?
Well, from my understanding, Joey Votto contacted Ross Atkins to say, hey, get me to Toronto because I'm bored out of my skull. I need to play baseball until, my end of days. And here's a guy who, you mentioned if he's over the hill, absolutely. And it's sad to see because here's a guy who had a monstrously high hill, right? At the peak of the summit, National League MVP, 6-time All-Star, a guy who would hit home runs, high batting average, one of the toughest guys to get out, walked a lot, played great for first base. Unfortunately, he's 40. And when you get to that age, father time does not lose. And slowly but surely whittles away your skill set. And for the Blue Jays, I think this is not a publicity stunt for one reason. Because you still have a young core on this team who I think can learn a lot from a Joey Votto. Not to say that, we have a bunch of 18 and 19-year-olds on the Blue Jays. But here's a guy who has been there and done that in the National League for 17 seasons with Cincinnati. Has done it all instead of, the only thing he hasn't done is won a World Series. But at the end of the day, has performed at the highest level. Knows to be, how to be a professional ball player. Can pass that knowledge along to some of the other guys on this team. He's not going to hit 30 homers. He's not going to hit 300, but he's going to be a value in that clubhouse.
Yeah, and there you go. Okay, now you just said it. I was hoping you were going to say that. Does that really mean anything with today's players, like value in the clubhouse? Like, what's Joey Votto going to say to Vladimir Guerrero? Like, what's he going to say to Bo Bichette? Hey, just keep doing what you're doing, kid. Like, I don't understand. Is this what this team needs right now? What I think this team needs right now is for their big name players to finally step it up. And I don't know if there's a little punch or a little tap that they need. Like based on what's happened over the last couple of years with ultimate playoff, I mean, Maple Leaf, like disappointment. These guys got to stand on their own 2 feet. Don't know.
No, absolutely. And you're looking at Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero, and probably stop right there, right? Mm-hmm. Because they've had some good performances from their pitching staff, which is kind of ailing as spring training is continuing. You know, Kevin Gausman's got to be healthy. Alek Manoah has to find who Alek Manoah is. Can Chris Bassett recapture what he had last year? Mm-hmm. What does the bullpen look like? Is Romano still going to be the guy? And
can they stay healthy?
That elite closer, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, health is a big issue this spring training. So Joey Votto's not here to save the day. I think he's here to be a depth guy, a good professional kind of veteran. Does he start the season in Buffalo? Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, he wants to play baseball. And I think that kind of rubs off on some of the other guys.
Yeah, and I'm just imagining the hype when he finally does get called up, because there's going to be an injury along the way. I don't know. We, in my opinion, there's still no one on third base that, I mean, yeah, Isaiah kind of Falefa can play the position, mm-hmm. but is he an everyday third baseman? Well, I don't think so. There will be at some point. He is called up. The hype train will be rolling. I just don't know. I mean, had this move been made 5 years ago, I would be talking completely different. It's unfortunate that he's a guy that's borderline Hall of Fame numbers on a real bad team for many, many years, mm-hmm. really never got a lot of taste into the postseason to prove himself, because it just wasn't good enough around him. And yeah, it's great that the guy from Etobicoke is playing down the road, but I mean, at this point, I'll tell you, in my fandom of the Blue Jays, the passport just doesn't matter to me. This team's just got to get it done.
Yeah, at the end of the day, again, he's 40. You know, 2012 was the last time he signed his mega contract, and now he's made all sorts of money. Mm-hmm. Even if he hits, let's say, 240 with 15 homers and 35 RBIs.
Well, that's an elevation from last year.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, he didn't play a lot of baseball last year. But if he can get kind of those numbers, and you're seeing his stats now, if he can get even close to that, I think it's a win for the Jays. Again, he's not here to save the day. He's not here to be the cleanup guy or even bat number third in the order. But maybe every fourth day kind of gets slotted in if they have an injury concern. And, you know, he can carry his own weight.
You know, we talk about free agent frenzy in hockey. The free agent frenzy right now is going wild in the National Football League.
Yes.
I mean, players that you thought would stay for years in other places, in particular teams, like, they are now moving around. You've got a guy like Saquon Barkley. Like, I mean, you just went from the Giants to the Eagles. I mean, Tiki Barber's losing his brain. Like, I mean, there's Twitter wars going on. It is unbelievable. And again, the money has been pretty good. I know the Dolphins have lost a couple. The Bills have lost some talent as well, too, and re-signed some players as well. But biggest move to this point, because there still could be many to come for in the National Football League in terms of free agency for you.
Biggest move, barring today's move with Derrick Henry now in Baltimore on a 2-year, $16 million deal, which below market value, but again, he's 30. But again, I mean, he carried the ball 250 times last year. That's a great move. But the biggest one for me, and it's the straw that stirs the drink, it's got to be at the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. So Kirk Cousins goes from Minnesota, in which he suffered, you know, that debilitating Achilles injury, mm-hmm. and is now an Atlanta Falcon. A franchise ever since Matt Ryan left, desperate for a franchise quarterback. And while Kirk Cousins might not be the elite of the elite, he's no Patrick Mahomes, he's no Jalen Hurts, he's not going to be in the MVP, you know, conversation, but offers not only stability, but I think with the weapons around him, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts at the tight end position, he offers a little bit of explosiveness, but most importantly, confidence in the offense. Here's a guy who has run it in Washington. He's done it in Minnesota. He's going to do it in Atlanta. He's not 40. He's 36. But at the end of the day, they have some weapons around him where he can be successful. I think from an impact position, he's going to have the biggest impact in the National Football League in terms of the free agents that have joined new teams.
You're right on point here, I think, right now. The Kirk Cousins things, I know there's a lot of people out there that like to laugh at him, like to call him out.
Yeah.
Hey, let's be truthful here. When he got injured with that Achilles last year, he was the best quarterback in the league statistically.
Yeah.
Right? And getting the job done for a Minnesota team that I think were playing well above their head. And from the time he got injured, that team just went, blah, 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 blah. That team had no chance. He is the perfect signing for the Atlanta Falcons right now. As he said, they do have targets, and that's what he needs. Is he a guy that's going to run around, like you said, a Patrick Mahomes? No, he's not that guy. He's not a Josh Allen or whatever, but he's going to drop back and sling that rock. And that is the difference between that team. The Falcons have been hurting, exactly like you said, for quarterbacks, even up to last year. Like, it just did not happen. They had a couple of young guys there. Yeah, not good. Here's a guy that's proven, ready. What I say about Kirk Cousins, always has a chip on his shoulder. Always has that chip on his shoulder. And I think that is a massive, massive move. And I will go back to what you said about the Baltimore Ravens. Like, come on. Come on. You know
what?
The
rich get richer.
Oh, the rich just got richer. I mean, a power running team that just added maybe one of the greatest power backs of the modern day, we'll say, at this point right now, who I still think has something to prove, and I think he's still got something left in the tank.
Yeah, you talk about guys with chips on their shoulder. Derrick Henry has a big one, maybe a king-size chip on that shoulder, and he's ready to rock and roll with Baltimore, who has Lamar Jackson. Now you're going to have Derrick Henry in the backfield. They got some good weapons at the receiver position. They've always had a good offensive line, and they've always had a good defense. So they're going to run it back in 2024.
Yeah, and you know what? You add him, and as we talk about Atlanta, like, their playbook is going to have to change slightly to suit the likes of a Kirk Cousins. Henry just pops right into that offense. It is a power running team with a quarterback that has displayed the ability to now be an improved passer and run the football, and if not scrambled. That is a scary, scary team right now. I say that as a Bills fan because I know right now at some point the Bills, yourself, Dolphins fan, going through to the AFC, and we cannot take it away from the Kansas City Chiefs, but remember, it was the Ravens at home that lost to the Chiefs. I'm sure that's in their brains right now. I would put them as the favorites right now in the AFC to get to the Super Bowl.
I don't think you're wrong there. I mean, they have Harbaugh head coach, and he's been there for a while. He's got his system. You have the reigning MVP, although there was some debate as to whether Lamar should have been the guy, but he's explosive. Derrick Henry still, I think, has a lot in the tank. Let's not forget, his first 2 years, he didn't really play a lot because he was, trying to get a hold of the league and what his position kind of entailed. He still has a lot left to give, and I think he's got something to prove. So the AFC might not have gotten better because he shifted from one AFC team to another, but I think the top of the AFC certainly got a lot better.
Here's an interesting discussion that I think we could be going at for maybe another decade at, or maybe for the rest of our lives, really. LeBron James recently surpassed 40,000 points as a player. That's the most of all time. No one may never get there. Who knows? I mean, it's so hard to get to that number. And he's still playing and probably looks like he's going to play again. So he will be adding to that number on a decent team where he's the primary scorer. That's way above everyone else. The all-time greatest NBA player discussion will continue because Michael Jordan, LeBron James, it's almost a generational discussion. Mm-hmm. Here are some of the numbers. I mean, and just there's so many metrics. These are just kind of some basic numbers to for fans to argue about. But as it stands now, Rick, I don't know where you stand in terms of, we're not too far apart in age, too. And sometimes this is, as I said, a generational discussion. Who is the NBA GOAT?
Well, I'd love to keep this graphic up because I'm going to point to a number, and it's the fourth one down on the right-hand column, and that's Michael Jordan. 6-for-6 NBA Finals. Every time he went to the NBA Finals, he won. In fact, All six of those NBA finals never got to a game seven because he was so good, so dominant, and yeah, he had amazing players around him. And LeBron, you can make the case, winning four NBA championships without the talent level that MJ had. Basketball's a team sport. Both guys have reached the pinnacle in terms of championship rings, scoring titles, being, you know, amazing defensive players. Another stat too, and it's not on the board, is, you know, steals. MJ led the league in steals a bunch of years. LeBron's never done that. Jordan has 10 scoring championships. LeBron won. But at the end of the day, these guys are championship pedigree. They can win on any team and would have done so. Who is the GOAT? For me, it's the guy on the right. Michael Jordan did everything well, and played in an era, Bubba, that was much more physical than it is today. Detroit Pistons would mug the heck out of you, and Jordan would still win.
That's a great point. And people that did not see basketball played at both levels and both generations would not understand that, because right now everything's a foul. You touch, and LeBron is master at that too. I mean, and I think he intimidates referees too. I mean, I think both probably did, but it was harder. Michael Jordan had to earn that. Michael Jordan in the early first 4 or 5 years, I mean, go look at the tapes. It's all on YouTube. The abuse that he took as a player, as, you know, playing a kind of high-flying, different style, not a grinding style of basketball compared to so many other players of his era and of his ilk. And he eventually blew by them, and he got that thick skin. LeBron, to me, is going to have the biggest numbers when it's all said and done. And that cannot be denied, and it does not take away from his greatness. But if we do have this discussion, and sometimes it is unfair, who was better, Gretzky or Lemieux, Bobby Orr? We could go on and on with these kind of discussions, but that's what we do in sports. We always want to crown somebody. And I still think, if I'm going to do that, because both you and I have seen the beginnings and the endings, or what will be the endings of both careers, and you're right, there is just something about Michael Jordan. I'm not even going to talk about the cultural difference that he added to the game and getting the NBA on the map that Michael Jordan did, because of the bald head, the smile, the shoes, all of that. But man, you're right. Even that all NBA defensive players, that I still think Michael Jordan was more well-rounded. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to say because, you know, LeBron beats him, you know, per game in terms of rebounding and assists, right? But I just think Michael just was a winner.
Here's the other thing, too. Basketball now is played so much differently than it was back in the 80s and early 90s when MJ was dominating, because the three-point shot is so evident in today's game. And back in the day, yeah, there were some good three-point shooters, but not every team had two or three guys on the court at any given time that could nail a three-pointer. It was more of a specialty back then. It was Larry Bird. It was, you know, MJ could hit the three when he wanted to. But, you know, from the elite, there was a huge drop-off. Nowadays, there's so many guys at that upper level. And if MJ played in today's, this is how I think of it. If MJ played in today's world of the three-pointer, he was a great three-point shooter. And it would open up so much room for him down low that it was not as punishing now than it was back then. He would be that much more special today, I think, compared to yesteryear. And he was special in yesteryear.
We look at a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander right now who well could be the NBA MVP, mm-hmm. and he's averaging 31 points per game. And Michael, for his career, averages close to 31 points for his career. But in his playoffs, it goes up to like 38. Yeah. Like, it is crazy what he did. And as you talk about it, you know, I kind of hearken this to Joe Montana and Tom Brady. And Tom Brady, I think in the end, I can call him the GOAT. I can officially call him the GOAT in terms of quarterbacks over Joe Montana, because Joe Montana went to four Super Bowls and won all four, very much like Michael Jordan did. Mm-hmm. And I still, but I think that you know, I kept saying, you know what, Tom's got to get to about 7. For me,
check mark.
It ended up being 7 out of 10, I think. Yeah. He had 3 losses, and there was a time where he was 6-3, and I'm like, okay, would I rather be 6-3 or would I rather be 4-4 and the MVP of 3 or 4 of those games? And I said, you know what, and to add that, I have to look at it one more time. I think in those 4 Super Bowls, Joe Montana never threw an interception. Mm-hmm. Like, that's great. That is greatness on the greatest day in a sport where there's not a three of five or a 4 of 7. The one game, you got to show up.
Yeah.
And Montana did that. But yes, I will surrender it to Tom Brady. But yeah, this discussion will, you know, and I know some people don't really like it because it is so tough and it is generational. And we talk about the differences of the games. But as I said, in sports, we kind of do that. We always want to crown somebody. Mm-hmm. And for me, it will be Michael Jordan for this point. Formula One, we talk about championships right now, and you want to give the championship to Max Verstappen already?
Might as well, right?
I mean, he's already 2 for 2 out of the gate, highest win percentage in one single season. I mean, now there are more races right now than there ever have been, and that is Max Verstappen's role right now, and he has been dominant right now. Here's the point, though, and I've been watching Formula One for a long, long time, and I know you fall in that category right now as well, too. There is a discussion that's going to happen. If he wins next week, I guess it'll be in 2 weeks. Has F1 become boring?
You know, we've had this conversation before, right? It was the Michael Schumacher Ferrari years. It was Ayrton Senna way back when. It was Alan Prost. It was, you know, Nelson Piquet, Lewis Hamilton. Yes and no. And I say yes and no because each and every Sunday when it's race day, we know who's going to win or who has the greatest probability of doing that. And hands down, it's Max Verstappen. He's the best driver in the best car, on the best team, and has the best crew, right? You're 4 out of 4. 4 stars, you're not going to lose unless something goes wrong. And in F1, sometimes that can happen. It's pretty rare with Max and his team, but we've seen it before. At the end of the day, though, from an entertainment standpoint, knowing that you're going to have a champion and you're going to have a race winner each and every Sunday that's going to be the same, okay, that's fine. Well, what's happening elsewhere in the grid? Who's fighting for those spots? And why I say no is because the excitement level is ramped up. When you hear Toto Wolff from Mercedes say, it would be amazing to have Max Verstappen on our team, you would not have heard that from him 2-3 years ago because Lewis was doing his thing, Max was just coming up and, you know, winning his first championship. But with the disarray, or at least supposed disarray, in the crew amongst Red Bull, on and off the track, maybe a window is open. So while it's fun to watch each and every race with the crashes, the competitiveness, you don't know who else is going to be on the podium other than Max, I think the intrigue with what's happening off the track is, let me say this, what's happening off the track is way more exciting than what is happening on the track.
There is a soap opera to F1, and anyone that has watched Formula One for a long time understands that. And I think if you also watch Formula One for a long time, you understand that this is the path that this sport goes down. There are dominant teams for a particular time, and then you're knocked off, and then someone else will dominate. This is the way it is, and I think because of, and I'm going to blame the likes of A Drive to Survive, because for the goodness and the fact that it has brought on a whole new fan base for the sport, it is a North American, for the most part, fan base that are used to the parity of the National Football League. They are used to the parity of so many other the sports in terms of Major League Baseball. Parity in North American sports. It's not like that in F1. It never will be, mm-hmm. right? Teams dominate for a particular time, and we just put up a board there that showed you the most dominant racers of all time who all had their point and all want Fangio, right?
Like right out of the gate.
The guy was unbelievable. Look, 47% of all times he was in a car with the 3-2-1, let's go.
Yeah.
He won nearly 50% of all his races, right? Lewis, most recently that we've seen, seen for, you know, as he comes down to perhaps the end of his career. And of course, what Michael did, this is what it was. And I never would hear Europeans or Brits or anyone that loves F1 say, this sport is boring. In North America, they're like, oh, yawn. Yes, it's Max. He wins another race. And like you said, it's what goes on with sometimes in the other vehicles. I mean, who's going to catch up in the midfield? This is part of the sport. I will enjoy it. Now, one thing I will say, I do enjoy some aspects of the former part of Formula One and the way the cars were. It bothers me that the fuel is not a strategy anymore.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, take a shot of the in-car look of the way these cars drive right now compared to, you know, even Michael or Senna. Mm-hmm. Like, those guys were masters of driving a high-level vehicle with all kinds of horsepower, and you were just holding on for dear life.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, probably the reason why more people died in the sport. I'm not saying that's what I want to see. But, boy, driving those cars right now is so much easier. A guy runs into you, cuts you off a little bit, or a guy dives in to make a pass, and then the drivers, you hear them in the on-car, oh, he's you! Oh, whoa! Come on. Come on, toughen up. Like, I mean, as Senna said, if you see a gap and you don't go for it, you're not a race car driver.
Yeah, and today's, just like the regular automobile, you know, you compare it to those of 10, 20 years ago, we're driving computers now, and it's kind of the same in F1. And the analytics behind the supersonic computers that they're driving on the track is absolutely astronomical. It's not only lap times, but, you know, segment times, section times, you know, this lap compared to the last lap. You know, are you hitting the apex at a certain point? It's so analytical, like a bunch of other sports has become. Yeah, you can get drawn and go down that rabbit hole and become an ultra fan in that. But at the end of the day, these drivers are super talented. Yeah, they might have a new age ego that we don't like. Mm-hmm. But back to your comment, I liked your comment about the dynasty aspect, because in North America, we have not had that apart from the New England Patriots in the NFL. And not to say that they won 4, 5, 6 Super Bowls in a row, but for 20 years, they were always winning the AFC East. They were always at the top of the AFC. They were always hosting the AFC Championship, them and Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. And then finally, Peyton retires or goes to Denver, wins another Super Bowl. But, you know, from basketball to baseball to hockey to even MLS, like, we haven't had one of those dynastic teams for a while. You have to go all the way back to the 90s for, you know, like the Pittsburgh Penguins winning a couple of cups with Mario, or, you know, the Oilers and Islanders of the early 80s. You know, baseball hasn't had a dynasty for eons. You know, the Yankees won their World Series years ago. When it comes to Formula One, yeah, we're much used to that, but it comes in segments and it comes in teams and different drivers, and that's what makes it fun.
I think so, you know, but we, you know, I digress, and we'll see what happens. I'm just going to say two names. Mike Tyson, Paul, like what have we gotten to in sports right now? Like, we're going to see a YouTube fighter versus a man that was a former heavyweight championship boxer, of maybe the greatest of his era, maybe the greatest single puncher we've ever seen, along with the likes of, you know, we'd have to put him in with George Foreman, maybe. Does this have any interest, you know, in for you? Like, I don't know. It's all presented on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm interested on a number of fronts. Number one, this is going to be the first ever live sporting event on Netflix, and anything live on a streamer is kind of intriguing from a viewer standpoint. You know, what's it going to look like? How's this going to be presented? What new are we going to see when it comes to graphics or stats or how the ring's set up? At the end of the day, it's still boxing. But you have a soon-to-be 58-year-old in Mike Tyson, whose best days were 30 years ago, or maybe even longer than that, 35 years ago, against a guy who is still, you know, I know he's considered, you know, a guy who has taken on some, you know, better competition over the last little while, but still not facing the best boxers that are out there. A glorified influencer who's now thinking, no, I can get into the ring. And, you know, I've heard that these two guys are going to wear headgear. And I've heard that they're going to have 18-ounce gloves, which are basically oversized mittens.
Huge.
And, yeah, so I don't think a lot of damage is going to be done. And that's probably for Jake Paul's case. Because if they were not wearing headgear and the ounce was way down in terms of the glove size, Mike Tyson can still pack a punch. And I don't think Netflix or either of these two guys, especially Paul, want to get hurt or want to get embarrassed. So I'm intrigued from a boxing fan standpoint, but I really don't care who wins, although I am going for Tyson just to beat the younger guy.
You know...
It's a sad state of affairs.
It is. But you know what? I think we were talking about it on the 6 o'clock news, and I called it junk, right? I don't know where to go with this sometimes I think about it, but people are talking about it. Like, people are talking about this. This is a sports discussion. When they get closer to the fight, there will be all kinds of hype. And you know what? I will somehow give in, and I will slap down my $59.99, and I will watch this train wreck. I will. I'm a sucker, right? And because we've always said it, there is nothing like, compared to any sport in the world, when two large men step in the ring, there is a curiosity, there is an excitement, there is a feeling amongst a crowd and people watching on TV that no other sport can duplicate. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they will all feel that way. But with that said, I'm going to tell you this. I think Jake Paul's a favorite. I think he's the favorite because, you know what, it's easy for Mike Tyson to show these little, what's Instagram is what, the Instagram stories, they go like 15 seconds or so. It's easy for him to sit there, go, like, it's so easy for him to do. But let's see if he can do that for two or three rounds at this age. Mm-hmm. We've already seen at the end of Mike Tyson's career, his stamina, nowhere near what it used to be. And again, can I say it this again? 58 years old. That was great what he did when he came back a couple of times. That was great what George Foreman did when he was 40, mm-hmm. and even a little after 40. 58 years old. Like, come on.
This is where boxing is. Sadly, it's fallen because now you have a soon-to-be 60-year-old, basically, let's call it, in Mike Tyson, who, and you're right, you know, one of the greatest pure punchers and packed a punch in his heyday. I mean, he was knocking guys out seconds from the opening bell. But at the end of the day, that stamina is huge in boxing, and Jake Paul is the favorite. In fact, Vegas oddsmakers have him as the favorite going into this match, and probably because of the headgear angle, because... if he's not wearing headgear, Tyson, you know, can still punch. But if he's going two or three rounds, that stamina is huge, especially in boxing when you're taking body blows, when you're dancing around, you know, the squared circle. It takes a lot out of you.
It does.
58, even though he's a professional athlete and was one of the greatest of all time, it's going to be tough for Mike to stick around that long.
Especially if Mike has to take a couple in the kidneys or in the chest where you really start to slow down and you're like, ooh, you know, like, and yeah, I'm sure he will present himself. He'll be the body beautiful. He will look really, really good. Again, 458 years old, not even 58. He'll look good. Mm-hmm. He will look good. He'll come in there trim. Legs will look nice and tight. Both of them will, obviously. And I don't think that will be as much of a scam. But I find it hard to believe that at this age, if this fight goes anything beyond three rounds, that Tyson can last that kind of way after taking some blows that probably won't be as hard-hitting. And again, the percentage... the punch percentage, I think, is going to be in favor of Paul as well, too, because Tyson's going to want to load up. And that and any boxer will tell you, or anyone that knows the sport very well, when you load up and you miss, that can take a lot of energy out of you. But anyway, the 60,000 people will be in Arlington. Millions will be watching on television, as I said, including you and I. And I guess that's just the way.
Yeah.
Folks, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun for you, Ricky. Thank you so much for joining
Absolutely.
Us and talking some crazy sports
Anytime.
Stuff. You know, and as we always say, guys, that's your sports line for the day. And as you've just seen and heard, we do love talking sports, no matter what the situation is. And if you do know of an athlete, team, or an event to promote, the Sports Line podcast, do want to hear from you. Hit that thumbs up, like, and subscribe button. And if you do have something to say, oh, we want to hear you, folks. Please comment. For the wonderful people that make the Sportsline podcast possible, thank you so very much, and we'll see you tomorrow.